What is up, Nets fans? Welcome to the Brooklyn Buzz. I'm your host, Nick Fay. With me, as always, Jack Manuel. What's up, Jack?
My, oh my, Nick. A lot changes when we're chatting with each other in the DMs about these Nets games. I'm at work and we're down 23-10, and then we win a game against the Denver Nuggets that was probably not expected.
Yeah, no, really impressive win for the Nets over the Nuggets, 135-130, snapped the three-game losing streak. You know, the Nets have won 10 of the last 11 at home. I did not expect a W tonight. You know, Allen Crabbe did come back, and that's still shorthanded, but they really turned it on at the end of that first quarter, and they really didn't look back.
Yeah, Nick, in terms of before we speak about the game in a bit more in depth, where does that win rank this season for you?
I think it's almost like a combination win because they swept the Nuggets this year, which is really impressive. The only other team to do that was the Bucks. So I think this would probably go top five win on the season just because they were still shorthanded. No Dinwiddie, no LeVert, no Dudley. Like, there's still injuries on this team. So a very impressive win in my eyes, especially the way they came back after a terrible first quarter. They really bounced back, and then they held on when the Nuggets made late runs in the game.
Yeah, I mean, that's what a good team does. You know, you have to expect that from the Denver Nuggets when you have the likes of, you know, Nikola Jokic, Jamal Murray, and just a plethora of wing depth and guys that can just score at will. So they're a very talented team. They've had a tremendous season. And like you mentioned, Nick, the fact that we could sweep a team that is, are they second now because Golden State are first?
Yeah, second now. And yeah, they did have injuries too, so we will throw it out there. I believe Gary Harris and Paul Millsap both didn't play, which are good players. But Denver is one of the deepest teams in the league, honestly.
Oh, absolutely. You know, Trey Lyles, Torrey Craig, Monte Morris, Juancho Hernan Gomez. Those are really good guys. And they're playing some really good basketball. And Mike Malone, the all-star coach, is a great coach at that. You know, he's developed a really nice team. And his play development, I think, deserves a lot of credit. But enough about the Nuggets, Nick. Who started this run? This momentum, obviously down 35-30 at the half. And apparently it was just that first half of the first quarter. So who was the sort of impetus for this momentum swing?
I felt like it was honestly the bench as a whole. They came in the game. We've seen this in the past. They really just changed the momentum. You know, a guy like Damari Carroll had four steals tonight. He had six assists in the first half, finished the game with 18 points. Felt like his energy, Ed Davis's toughness. Shabazz Napier played one of his best games as a point guard. Rondae Hollis-Jefferson played pretty under control, brought some nice energy in there. So the bench unit gets a lot of credit for kind of turning this thing around. We saw Allen Crabbe come back, brought some energy too. So bench gets a big shout out from me.
Yeah, if you want some stats about the bench that sort of reflects that, Ed Davis plus 17, Rondae Hollis-Jefferson plus 17, Damari Carroll plus 24, and Shabazz Napier plus 5. Our entire bench, and even Allen Crabbe, our entire bench plus 1. So all of our bench players were positive in the plus minus. And, you know, only D'Angelo Russell, who was you know, neutral, plus 0, was positive for our starters. So we sort of talked about the fact that, you know, our depth has been, you know, a real key for us. And, you know, Damari Carroll getting to the line 13 times is absolutely tremendous. Really looking forward to watching, rewatching this one. But tell me more about Damari Carroll's game, Nick. It seems like, you know, this might be one of his best games as a Net, it looks like.
Yeah, honestly, it probably was. Energy-wise, he just came in with some juice. I had a feeling that maybe Kenny or the coaching staff talked to him and was like, you know, we need you to step up and bring the energy because the team is slacking right now, and he's kind of that leader. And Kenny's talked about it in the past. Like, if he needs something for somebody on the team, he can tell Damari, and Damari's going to do that. He brought the energy, got active in transition, got to the free throw line 13 times, but the four steals really stuck out. He did a great job of just poking the ball out and creating some opportunities for himself and the rest of the Nets.
Yeah, I mean, that's where we've sort of needed it. When you're down and you're in a bit of a slump, that's when you need guys like Damari Carroll to step up. And he's done that plenty this season, but probably not as in such an emphatic way. But we were talking a little bit, obviously, about Shabazz Napier off wax, Nick. And you said that this seemed like a really pure point guard performance. What made you say that?
Yeah, a career high 11 assists right there. You know, not a lot of bad shots. You know, Shabazz in the last game, I think he was like 0-10 from three, took a lot of quick shots early in the shot clock. Tonight, he really didn't do that. He got things going, made the right pass. And even at times when he broke down his defender and in the past he'd go for a layup, he made the extra pass. You know, one play really stuck out. It was like a super big highlight play. He broke down his defender, then hit Damari with a quick pass for an easy layup.
Is that the one that caused one of the best gifts of all time to come into existence?
Yes. Yes, it was. That's what got the bench going. Even Barclays, and shout out to the Nets fans tonight because they were absolutely loud. Like, you could hear them on TV, and that play got everybody going in the arena.
I mean, it's It makes me envious, and it makes me really, really want to get to New York sooner rather than later. So if there are any, you know, employers listening that are primary school heads or writers looking for someone, hit me up, you know, at the J-Man JBT. But Nick, in terms of you mentioned the assists from Shabazz Napier, 36 total assists. We spoke about it in terms of the last few episodes, in terms of Coach Kenny saying the ball's been sticking a little bit. It's been the offense has been stagnant. Seemed like it was anything but tonight.
Yeah, the ball really was moving well. Like you said, 36 assists. I believe that might be season high for the Nets on 46 made field goals. That's just excellent. Obviously, it helps when they're hitting so well from three, but it was some of the Denver's defense getting inside. They started collapsing a little bit more and just playing that inside-out game, and that's when the Nets are at their best.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty basketball to watch as well. It's when the ball is moving, you know, it leads to open shots. And I think it's sort of is a nice correlation to us talking about, you know, the 3-point shooting. You know, Joe Harris, 3 of 6 from the arc. D'Angelo Russell, 6 of 9. That guy has just become absolutely lethal from there. And Trevion Graham, 4 of 6. Fuego, Nick, everyone right there.
Yeah, I mean, we were due. Like the last two games we talked about, they shot under 25% in both those games. You know, I think they made a combined 15 threes in both those games. And what they have tonight, almost 18 or 20 threes.
19.
So there you go. I was right on both sides of that. But, you know, it was just like they were due for it. It was also a great job, just like we said, moving the ball, getting those open shots. And as soon as one guy knocks it down, it felt like everybody's kind of starting to catch momentum. And you mentioned Trevion Graham. You know, he looked confident shooting the threes. It was also Jokic was defending him, and he was just giving wide open looks. And I think eventually when you start giving guys just wide open looks, allows them to build up that confidence, and it's kind of contagious.
Yeah, and I think, yeah, like you were sort of saying, it's contagious. You know, the hot hand is a thing. You know, a lot of people, I think even studies have been done on the hot hand conundrum and whether it's actually a thing. Guys like J.R. Smith, our boy D'Angelo Russell, Kyrie Irving. It's a thing in basketball. Like, you know, and I think it's infectious, like you mentioned, across the team. You know, 55.9% from the arc. I mean, we shot like 10%. So, I mean, if you're averaging that out, it ends up being like about 33%. So, I mean, I think that this we were due for one, Nick. And in relation to that, you know, Joe Harris, you mentioned to me that Joe Harris spoke about Alan Crabb. Only 13 minutes, 1 of 2 from the three, 2 of 5 from there. A couple of assists, you know, a steal. Tell me about his first comeback game.
Yeah, I think he looked good for somebody who hasn't played in 26 games. You know, he brought some good energy, off-ball movement. Defensively, he wasn't bad out there. I don't remember him getting embarrassed or anything. Knocked down his first shot, which we know is big for Allen Crabb. And I think it's just another body out there that makes the defense honest. Like, we know he hasn't played, but defenses are still know the scouting report. He's lethal from three, so they have to chase him around the floor. And I think it gives the Nets, you know, even though he's been inconsistent, another pretty good player to add to their depth.
Definitely. I mean, depth is the key for us. And I mean, it means guys like Mitch Creek and Theo Pinson don't get to see as many minutes. But when you have Alan Crabb waiting in reserve, a really, you know, a proven 3-point marksman, it certainly helps and then some. But Nick, I think we'd be remiss if we didn't talk about it. I think our fans are probably right, as we love to say, if we didn't speak about D'Angelo Russell. Tell me about his game, the leadership. He's here, as he said.
Yeah, another huge game for D'Lo, man. Like 27 points, 11 assists, 6 rebounds, only 3 turnovers. He had one of his mini dominant runs in the third quarter where he was just straight fuego. And it's just big. Like getting wins against big teams and D'Lo having a big game just feels so good. Where sometimes in the past it felt like he had some of these big games and the Nets lost. Now these big games are resulting in wins and he's really developing into a true all-star. Where I know there's question like, oh, is he really an all-star? Like, no, he really is an all-star, and he continues to put up these big performances night in and night out.
Dave DeFore, you know, a very noted NBA Twitter personality, said he's a franchise player. Right now, he is our franchise player. He's appearing on the ESPN. He's got the swagger. You know, he's 3-point shooting. He is a top 5 3-point shooter in terms of point guards. Is that going too far? Top 8? I don't know.
Yeah, I think that's reasonable to say. I think on the season, he's top 10 in terms of 3-pointers made on the year. So that's obviously a big jump, and we've seen his numbers jump, and he's been better of late. I would probably since December, he's shooting close to 40% from three, and he just has these stretches where he's knocking down contested, uncontested threes, off-balance threes, whatever it is. He just gets in the zone.
His pull-up game is insane. Like, in terms of, I don't know what he did in the off-season, but it just seems like now, compared to last season when it came through, a lot of the guys, when D'Angelo Russell has the ball on the perimeter and he's shooting it, I'm just almost expecting it to go in these days. Like, and I think that change of mindset is also, you know, been a change for him. He's just confident in taking them. You know, it's the way of the league right now. You see Luka Doncic and James Harden doing it. But D'Angelo's quietly doing it himself. But Nick, 11 assists as well. Any plenty of highlight plays in there, I'm guessing, as well?
Yeah, you know, on the regular basis. It gets to the point now where D'Angelo makes, like, no-look passes. And you're like, oh, that's normal. Like, it's just something you come to expect from him.
Did he have a dunk?
He did have a dunk. I don't know how I did not mention that. I was literally like kind of sitting back, you know, enjoying the game. You know, this is when the Nets are starting to make a run. And then all of a sudden, D'Angelo throws it down. I was like, what? Even the bench kind of like freaked out a little bit. Like everyone was amazed. He kind of had that like half-ass dunk against Phoenix early in the year, but this one was actually a dunk.
Yeah, I mean, insert any amount of shook gifts as you want to do there, right there. But speaking about the bench reactions, Nick, just to like touch on it before we get to Kyrie Irving and trade stuff. What does that say to you as a fan and as a follower of this team? And obviously the players are loving it and they're buying in, you know, guys who aren't getting minutes and guys who are getting benched, like, you know, D'Angelo Russell gets benched, but he still has some hype as heck, you know, celebrations. What does that say to you about this team?
Well, I'll say just directly from Kenny and Joe Harris after the game, they talked about how much it means for them, helps keep, you know, the morale high, brings a good attitude, especially they pointed out guys like Theo Pinson, Alan Williams, Mitch Creek, like coming in every day, knowing that you're probably not going to play and knowing your role in the team and still bring that type of energy. I think it's huge. And it kind of speaks about the culture and the type of people they like to bring into Brooklyn. And I think as a fan, you enjoy that. You appreciate that. And I'm sure it helped gets the fans going at the arena.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, I live for Theo Pinson dances. He is, I mean, has he replaced Cameron Payne as the premier dancer in the NBA?
Yeah, I would say so, because Cameron Payne's been bouncing along on different teams. And at this point, I don't know if Theo Pinson might even be a better NBA player.
Theo Pinson is absolutely a better NBA player than Cameron Payne. And, you know, Cam Payne was only a good dancer because he had Russ to bounce off. And that's a hot take right there. But Nick, any other things that you wanted to touch on before we left? Just looking at the box score, in terms of Rodion's only playing 17 minutes, I'm assuming that, and I like it because obviously Damari Carroll was the hot hand. Was that essentially what it was? You know, Damari was just your guy. You just couldn't take minutes away from.
Yeah, I thought like the rest of the guys played well. You know, Rodion's wasn't amazing. He wasn't bad. But, you know, Rondé had a solid game. He had some really nice takes. And going back to him a little bit, D'Angelo and him definitely have chemistry. And you can see D'Lo tries to get Rondé going. He's always talking to him on the sideline. So I think that's a positive relationship. I think just a shout out to Trevion Graham, because not only did he knock down the threes, he did a pretty good job, you know, attacking Denver and getting some of those teardrops in there. And then Jared Allen had like stretches. If he didn't get in foul trouble in the first half, he might have had a bigger game. He is getting a better feel for when to use his athleticism against different centers. You know, we saw him have big games against Marcus Gasol. He had a solid game against Jokic because he realized that he's just a superior athlete.
Yeah, and I think that once he realizes that and, you know, his body starts to fill out, he'll have, you know, a combination of size and athleticism that will make him, you know, a pretty fearsome sort of center, you know, for many years to come. You know, I think I saw a quote from Kenny, you know, a second-year center that's starting for a playoff team. That's pretty tremendous and a feat like no other. But, you know, speaking of feats, you know, most wins since 2015, I believe, Nick.
Yes, and they have more wins than they had last season already. You know, last year they finished with 28, now they're at 29, you know, in the sixth seed. I think, you know, they're just killing expectations on the year in my eyes.
Yeah, I mean, they're probably going to exceed mine and then some. But, and yeah, we've spoken about this sort of tough stretch and, you know, the fact that, you know, we needed to get some wins. You know, the Denver Nuggets win, you know, despite the poor performance against Milwaukee, it's one that many fans, and including, you know, just not just Brooklyn Nets fans, but fans in general, that wouldn't have expected the Nets to get this one. So it certainly helps heading into the All-Star break.
Yeah, and I mean, you know, they got three games remaining before All-Star break, Chicago, Toronto, and Cleveland. If they were able to go 2-1 in that stretch, I think the Nets would be pretty happy and going to the All-Star break with the sixth seed and a couple games over 500.
That would be amazing. It would be amazing. But, you know, one game at a time as the Nets, and I like to preach. I'm obviously not never optimistic, always level-headed, as they like to say. But, Nick, Kyrie Irving, a Brooklyn Net?
That was obviously, you know, the talk of the night a little bit in between quarters on NBA TV. I guess David Griffin was on there and he talked about, they were talking Kyrie, and he mentioned that he thinks Brooklyn's a better fit and that's where Kyrie would prefer because they already have the culture set in stone. I mean, it's a possibility, but right now it seems like D'Angelo's a point guard of the future. And I'm not saying he's better than Kyrie, but in terms of long-term and the contract situation and where the Nets need to upgrade the roster, it might make more sense to retain D'Lo than go after Kyrie. And I know that sounds kind of crazy, but in a bigger picture of roster creating, it might make sense.
Yeah, I mean, if we're talking about how the Kyrie Irving domino affects all the other ones, obviously the signing of Tobias Harris in Philadelphia, Jimmy Butler's still there. Does, you know, Kyrie, if he were to, you know, make his way down to Brooklyn, down to Barclays, does that lead, you know, a Jimmy Butler to him? We've mentioned that before. Or does it, or you know, KD. Lead Tobias Harris or KD? I mean, I think I'm pretty sort of set on, like, even Ethan Sherwood Strauss, you know, a real Golden State Warriors insider, seems almost set on the fact that he's going to New York, New York Knicks, not to to Brooklyn. So you know, I think that seems, you know, a lot more likely with a Rich Kleiman connection and just what he's sort of been doing the last few days, not speaking to media. So for me, you know, a Kyrie Irving is a possibility. And I mean, I know you mentioned the fact that, you know, D'Angelo Russell is more likely, more likely to re-sign. But man, imagine having them both. That'd be probably the most lethal offensive backcourt in the league.
I was thinking about that, honestly. Like, I was giving it some thought. Could Kyrie and D'Angelo Russell play together? I think it's a possibility. I mean, then you probably have to look to move, you know, LeVert or Dinwiddie because you don't necessarily want all those ball handlers. But you never know because injuries do happen. I think it's not out of the realm of possibilities, but I think it'd be better for both players to play without each other because they both like to have the ball in their hands. But like you said, offensively, that'd be some major pop. Another idea I saw floated out there was maybe, you know, they use D'Angelo in a sign and trade with New Orleans. They trade for AD and then they sign Kyrie.
I mean, but there's wild things that could happen in this NBA, Nick. So we'll have to certainly watch this space. But
and another thought on that, Jack, to sort of cut you off, would be, you know, not even the fact that the Nets do sign Kyrie. It's the fact that Kyrie wants to play in Brooklyn. This is similar to when we talked about Jimmy Butler in the summer. The fact that
Chris Stapps.
Yeah, Chris Stapps as well. Like you said, yeah, he that was we're one of the teams that he'd be willing to sign with long term. Like, this is saying a lot about the culture that Sean Marks is building and all those offer sheets, all those good moves he's made, like, you know, releasing Allen Williams so he could sign with China, even though he came back. Like, agents are noticing that, players are noticing that, especially with a lot of guys complaining about how they're treated around the league. It seems like Brooklyn does right by the players.
Yeah, I think you hit the nail on the head right there, Nick, in terms of they know that this is a player-driven league, and they're going to do everything to make their players feel comfortable, to make their players better, you know, no matter what age you are and what point of your career that you're at. Tomari Kell's playing the best basketball of his career, you know, now maybe up there with, you know, his Atlanta Hawks days. And, you know, guys like Trevion Graham and D'Angelo Russell has turned into an all-star. You know, Caris LeVert's popped off. Spencer Dinwiddie was a former G League project. Joe Harris is in the three-point contest. And you know, you add a Kyrie Irving to that, you don't know Anthony Davis to that, you know, under the coaching of a guy like Kenny Atkinson, who knows what could happen with these guys. But it's wonderful to speculate, but you know, we've got a good enough team as it is right now, and that camaraderie is something that I think a lot of players are envious of, and teams, mind you. But Nick, is Miritic, as he liked to sort of tweet out, the missing puzzle piece for this Nets team?
It's definitely a possibility, and the Nets were rumored to have interest via the Ringer. Kevin O'Connor said, I think it was like the Nets, the Jazz, and like the Spurs is the main teams interested right now. It looks like New Orleans is asking for a first-round pick. I doubt the Nets would give up their pick. Maybe they'd give up Denver's first-round pick. And the possibility, you know, there's been some other rumors about maybe trading Allen Crabbe and then getting back Miritic and Wesley Johnson, but they just traded Wesley Johnson to Washington. So I think it would have to be, you know, like Jared Dudley and Rondae Hollis-Jefferson and maybe like the Denver first or the Knicks second rounder and for Miritic. But I don't know if it's going to happen. I think it's a possibility. What are your thoughts on it?
Yeah, I mean, there's just some silly moves happening across the league that it's just hard to predict what a franchise is going to do. You know, the New Orleans Pelicans have obviously signed on a guy like Markieff Morris, obviously a guy who plays Miritic's position. So does that mean, you know, you're signing him as in just insurance to go forward, just to have a healthy, you know, NBA-ready body? Markieff Morris, you know, would be also okay in Brooklyn if they were to flip him again, but I don't think that's going to happen or buy him out. I just got no idea. Like, I know that Sean Marks will make steady, you know, rational moves, but I can't say that for the rest of this league, you know, with teams like Chicago doing wild things, Washington doing wild things, New Orleans, the Lakers. It's just, it's a crazy league. And, you know, obviously it helps being somewhat sane. And, you know, obviously the sanity of Sean Marks is something we can rely on. But there could be even under the radar moves that we didn't expect. You know, obviously for the most part, all the deals and all the inner workings of Brooklyn never come out. You know, the D'Angelo Russell trade came out of nowhere. So if anything does happen, there could be a guy that we just haven't even spoke about on the podcast that could end up wearing the black and white.
Yeah, and you mentioned the idea that so many teams are crazy and they get desperate on the deadline looking for assets. So you could end up getting a player for a steal. You know, there's a bigger name that you didn't think was available. Next thing you know, he's on your team for a cheap price. You know, in the other end of the spectrum, somebody might call Brooklyn and say, hey, we're going to offer you, you know, an excessive amount for a player, and Sean Marks might take it just because we've seen some crazy deals out there from desperate teams.
Absolutely, absolutely. Nick, anything else you wanted to touch on before we finish this one?
I think one more thing, Jack. I think I just want to talk about how the Nets are becoming a really good home team. You know, they won 10 of the last 11 at home, 14-2 since that win against Toronto. So right now, I think, and this is kind of what good teams do, is they win at home. And that's something that's becoming consistent for the Nets. Obviously, they played bad against Milwaukee, but they bounced back against a great team in Denver. What are your thoughts on them as a home team?
I think this is what's going to drive the fans into Barclays. If you keep doing this and you play winning basketball, the fans have to show up. And, you know, whether they're the fair weather fans, because, you know, the guys that go to the Knicks games are generally the tourists. But, you know, if you're staying in an Airbnb, nice little place in Brooklyn, down on Flatbush, you know, you're going to go down the road to a place like Barclays and watch an entertaining winning team. And I think this is obviously, you know, this success at home has been a part of just the general success of plenty of other platforms, be it the Brooklyn Buzz or, you know, Nets Republic in general. And in terms of like our sort of individual following, you know, it allows us to sort of engage with the fans a lot more. And when you win games at home, you know, it draws the fans in. And despite the fact that we're certainly, you know, have a ways to go, I believe Forbes ranked us, you know, in the top 10, I think it's sixth or seventh.
Sixth.
So, I mean, it's saying something, because you're a team in New York. You know, you have that cachet. You have a wonderful stadium, a wonderful franchise in terms of, you know, everything that's been running there by Sean Marks and Kenny Atkinson and the players, young team. What's not to love? And the fact that they're winning, you know, you mentioned the Miami Heat and the fact that they're not winning away from home. You'd much rather be winning those games at home and, you know, against, you know, quality teams like Toronto, Philadelphia, and Denver. Because that's going to, you know, develop that connection with the fan. That's going to bring them back.
And I think one thing you mentioned, entertaining, like this game was really fun to watch. Like even Ian Eagle and Jim Spanarko were saying during the game, like this is a really entertaining game of basketball. They just have a lot of highlight players from D'Angelo Russell to Jared Allen, you know, getting back a guy like Caris LeVert. It's just a really exciting time to be a Nets fan.
Before we go, Nick, obviously we spoke about on the last pod, is Caris back against Chicago?
See, like last time when you asked me that, I didn't feel confident about it. But then I heard Ian Eagle bring up the idea that he could be back. And Ian kind of like doesn't really speculate a ton. Like he usually has some inside information. So I actually think we might see him against Chicago. I'd put it at like, I'll put it at 50%, because he brought it up. And if he didn't bring it up, I would have stayed the same. But I think 50% against Chicago, because it's another bad team, then they could even let him rest and maybe play him again against Cleveland. That would still give him, I think, 4 days off in between.
Yeah, I mean, it'd be watch this space. I've obviously done a bit of a breakdown on Nets Republic of some of his highlight plays of this season. And it just reiterated the fact that, damn, he's just a good player. And he's just going to be so exciting in this already exciting team. So,
and it gives them something they don't have. Like you did the breakdown and it was amazing. And it just, you know, kind of signifies like some of the things he does. Like the Nets don't have somebody who can drive to the paint like him, especially with Dinwiddie out. Like he provides something that they don't have right now.
I think in a way as well, and Spencer is great at drawing contact, but Caris's footwork and dexterity around the rim is something that was insane. And I think as well, Caris's passing game in that sort of restricted area, I think is a little bit better than Spencer's. Not to say that Spencer's isn't
good himself. He's more patient down there.
Yeah, and I think that has come this season. You know, we've sort of talked about him in the past when we first started this pod that, you know, he'd be over the top, you know, he'd be running too fast, he's a deer in headlights. But now we know the composure of a guy like, you know, Caris LeVert, you know, two game winners. He's an absolute stud, and to get him back and into this team, it's going to be something to behold. And you know that they're going to bring him back in a really measured way at the same time, probably similar to Alan Crabb. But we spoke about that on the last pod, so check that one out as well for more in-depth talk about that. But Caris watches on. I'm excited. And, you know, to add this guy to what's already an exciting season and before the All-Star break, it's It's nothing but daisies in it, and hopefully this good news continues.
Yeah, I can't wait to pop out my Karis LeVert jersey. You know I haven't worn it yet because he hasn't played, so I've been letting it sit in the closet, and I'm ready to go. I guess also we'll give a quick shout-out to Nets Daily, 15th anniversary for them, also Pooch's birthday, so happy birthday. Nets Daily, obviously a huge reason where I know me personally is so into the Nets, so obviously a great place for Nets basketball.
Anything relating to Nets Twitter is just been absolutely awesome. Like Nets Daily sets the standard. Anthony Puccio sets the standard. They're people we strive to be, and they set the example in that sort of sense. But they've also, you know, really inclusive, really nice people, and they're just it's wonderful to have platforms like that, you know, in the NBA and for this team. And you know, we're going to be growing. The Nets Republic is going to be growing, and you know, it's a ways to go. But you know, Nets Daily and Anthony Puccio set the standard. Those are and they're growing with this team. They deserve all the success that they're having, and it's well-deserved.
Yeah, they do, because they grinded even when the Nets were terrible. But like you said, also shout-out to Nets Twitter, who's been absolutely, like, super fun, especially over these last couple months, and it keeps getting bigger and bigger.
Yeah, I mean, Nets Twitter is a fun place to be. It's much better than, you know, Lakers Twitter than right now.
Especially right now.
And Pelicans Twitter. So Nets Twitter, stay strong.
Yeah, honestly, if you look at Lakers and Pelicans Twitter right now, it's all hate. Like, all the Pelicans fans are like, oh, the Lakers offer is terrible. And all the Laker fans are like, oh, the Pelicans franchise is terrible. So, but we'll be happy about the Nets and they're winning. We'll worry about the other franchises some other day. Jack, always a pleasure. Thank you, everybody, for listening. Check us out, iTunes, Block Talk Radio, OGGBasketball.com, NetsRepublic.com, Dash Radio, and YouTube. Also, any big trades happen for the Nets, Jack and I will be back on tomorrow.